I want to tell you a story about a kid that wasn't like the rest of the kids that I grew up with at Lincoln Elementary in Jacksonville, Illinois. He was bigger than the other kids in the fifth grade. He was about 5 feet and a half tall and was rather heavy, which was very unusual back in the 60s. There weren't that many kids that were overweight. His name was Jimmy Wilson, and he spent 2 years in the fifth grade. He was held back because he was slow. That's what everybody said back in the day. Jimmy Wilson was slow. He had a pleasant face, kind of a round face, though it was unusually round in a sense. He had a very sweet smile and disposition, but he had fear in his eyes, and for good reason, because since he was slow, he was an easy target for jokes of the simplest kind that became mean in time. So if you were to say to Jimmy, "Hey, your mom's calling you, Jimmy, you need to go home," he'd go home. And he would do this again and again and again, even though it was the same worn-out, tired joke. Boys found out that even though he was large, he would not hit back even if he was hit. And so if somebody was in a mood to hit somebody, well, then Jimmy, he was the perfect target. For some reason, Jimmy and I hung out a lot on the playground. We sat beside each other on the school bus that took us from where we lived in Jacksonville over to our elementary school. And I have to be honest with myself, it wasn't always for the most altruistic reasons that I hung out with Jimmy. I enjoyed his company partly because he would do what I told him to do. If I said that we were going to play cowboys and Indians, he always let me be the Indian. I was an odd child. Or if we were going to play cops and robbers, he'd let me be the cop, though he didn't make a very good bad guy because he was way too sweet. And it's hard to arrest somebody who waits for you to catch him and then smiles at you as you apply plastic handcuffs to him. We hung out for my remaining 2 years in grade school, and the more I hung out with him, the more I enjoyed his company because he wasn't competitive like the rest of my friends. When you were with him, he simply enjoyed your company. Always would offer me a stick of Wrigley's gum. He was a sweet guy, had a sweet disposition, and I missed him when his family moved out of town. And while I hardly think of Jimmy anymore, he still pops into my head from time to time, especially as I read this story about Jesus' entry into Jerusalem. And something about Jesus riding in on a donkey, a very docile animal at best, a symbol of peace, not of war and victory. And that made me think back on Jimmy Wilson. As that crowd stood waving palm branches and shouting Hosanna, by week's end, they would be spitting and punching Jesus just like they did Jimmy Wilson because they could and because he wouldn't fight back. But it wouldn't be until I went down last week and did the memorial service in Flemington for a dear friend that I came to see what all of this meant, in a sense, for me. I remember back to when I lived in Flemington and I had just dropped my car off for service and I was waiting for the local bus to take me back down to the church when I noticed a group of mentally challenged people that were approaching me down the sidewalk. And I could tell that they were mentally challenged because of how they walked. They weren't walking in that stiff, straight way that we tend to walk. They were very loose and relaxed. And I remember feeling a bit uneasy as they approached me at the bus stop. I'm sure it had to do with the fact that when we see people who are different than us, people who maybe are challenged in this way or in other ways, we tend to feel some pity, but also some fear, which in turn makes us feel guilty, which in turn makes us want to justify why our anger or our fear is rationally okay, and it makes us feel uncomfortable, and the more that we feel uncomfortable, more this cycle takes over. Mind you that Jimmy Wilson didn't do anything to warrant being picked on ever. There was nothing that he did that warranted the abuse that he got. It was simply because he was different than us. And that made people uncomfortable with him because it made them uncomfortable with themselves. And when someone is different from us, we tend to think and imagine all kinds of things, especially the most negative things Our assumptions never go to the most positive things ever, at least not for me. They always tend to go to the worst possibilities. And then we tell ourselves that this is true, that the way I feel is right, even if we have no experience to validate those negative thoughts, even if we're just passing on what somebody else has told us or some ancient mystery that we encountered that we didn't quite fathom. We had to learn this. We had to learn this. It doesn't come naturally. We were taught to do this to one another. Think of all the ways that we've been doing this throughout our history. Samaritans against Judeans. Judeans against Samaritans. Jews against Gentiles. Men against women. Paul puts it this way. And when did all of this happen? It's been going on, I think, since the garden story, since our fall from grace. When did we start to notice the distinctions and hold on to them as if they really mattered? Because, frankly, they don't matter to God. They don't matter to God. The entire New Testament is based on God knocking down one barrier after another that we erect, be it a religious barrier that excludes some people, be it a political barrier, be it an economic barrier. God is knocking down barriers. You can't read the Bible and not see it. So I found myself boarding that bus with all of these mentally challenged people feeling a bit ashamed for feeling uncomfortable and awkward, you know, in their presence, self-conscious in their presence. And they could have cared less. They didn't even notice me. Like me, they were adults, but unlike me, they were having fun. The way children have fun when they get together. One young man was reaching up behind the back of another young lady that was standing next to him on the bus, and ever so carefully he'd reach up and he would pull on her pigtail, and then he'd look straight ahead like he had done nothing wrong. And he would laugh, he would smile, and she would swat his hand and she'd say, "Stop it." But they were all having fun on the bus. And then for a brief moment, just because I was immersed in this around me, I was a kid again. I was taken back to that school bus that I used to ride on with Jimmy Wilson bumping along our way towards Lincoln Elementary. And for a brief moment, I forgot about the distinctions. I simply enjoyed the fact that they made me feel good by their fun, by what they were doing. And I vividly remember how much fun I had when I was their age, or when I was younger, I should say, when I was Jimmy Wilson's age, with all of my buddies, Guy Friesen, Jimmy Twyford, Jimmy Wilson, Hackett, Jimmy Hackett. What a sweet relief it was to forget about the distinctions, even if it was for a moment. I'd like to think maybe that's what Jesus felt when he came into Jerusalem on that Palm Sunday so long ago, that sweet relief, if only for a moment, when everybody was like a kid again, and all that seeks to separate us was made meaningless for one moment by everybody's excitement that Jesus had finally arrived in their midst, even though they quite didn't understand what this Messiah was all about. How sad it is really for us, I think, as adults, that it doesn't seem to last, that we find ways to separate ourselves far more than we do find ways to unite ourselves. And one time in our lives, when we were young, it seemed as if this would never end, this idea of getting along and having fun. In fact, we hoped for it all the time, hoped to be outside more than inside, wanted to be with my buddies until my dad would whistle us in for dinner or whistle us in because it was bedtime and it was getting dark. We would celebrate together by having fun every day. But in the end, as adults, we crucify people like Jesus and Jimmy, because they have no real value to us, because they don't fit our expectations. And that scares us, because they challenge us to change, to go back to being a kid again. As Jesus said when he put a young child in front of the disciples, he said, "For such is the kingdom of heaven. Look at them, look at them." I look at the young people today and I take heart. Thank God for yesterday. There must be something wrong, though, with Jesus, man. Whoa. How could everybody else around me be wrong, right? He's got to be the oddball that's responsible for all of my disappointments and what I had hoped for and my disillusionment and my anger. Yeah, he knew what he was doing, all right. So let's show him. Let's kill him. I mean, if only we could get clemency for one person, let's ask for it for Barabbas. After all, Barabbas, he fought for us. He was a zealot. He hates Rome just like we do. And at least he tried to do something for our cause. So give us Barabbas and crucify the fake. When all of the profound words have been said over Holy Week, what's it really all about? Am I to identify with the crowd on Palm Sunday who one moment are cheering the arrival of Jesus as the long, long liberator come to set me free from whatever it is that I want to be set free from, only to be crying for his death when he fails to live up to my expectations 5 days later? Well, I'm not different from them. Why would I be different from them? During Holy Week, this is made so abundantly clear. It's why I think all of these services that we do are important for you to attend. None of us can come before God and say, I would have done differently, Lord. I would have been different than those who cheered him one moment only to shout, crucify him the next. I wouldn't have done that. We may not have driven the nails into him, but we abandoned God the moment the going gets tough. We abandoned God the minute that he calls us to do something that is bold, revolutionary, and different. Something that scares us. Something political, like, oh my God, turning over the tables of the money changers. Or marching in the streets. We put politics, ideology, economic self-interest before God all the time. I never hear Christians ask, what would Jesus do anymore? I don't hear that question from us. No, because that would mean that we would have to change. I think it's a good thing that God is willing to change, unlike us. Because if we were to get what we deserve, none of us would be standing here, seated here, today. None of us. Because God's answer to our sinfulness is not one of judgment and violence and hate. Instead, it's one of forgiveness and love and grace. Why don't we get it? Why don't we get it? We, who are the witnesses, who are the disciples of Christ, why don't we get it? Amen.